Thanks for everyone showing up after lunch on a Friday. I appreciate that. It's dedication. And I also want to thank Chapman University Perimeter and everyone who had invited me here. And I appreciate the opportunity of presenting this work to you. First, a few caveats. I'm going to already start qualifying everything I'm about to say, which is the word contextuality. When I say it's a contextuality-based QKD protocol, what I'm really saying is I believe it is, but proving that that's really what makes this work is really the direction I'm trying to go. So, and I'm actually still learning the complexities of ontological models. So suggestions are appreciated. So here's an outline of what I'm going to present today. Basically, there's an issue with QKD in making it practical. Practical means a lot of things. Basically, it means you can afford it and it's useful. one of the issues is the key rates. There seems to be a trade-off between the degree of security and the key rate, which is kind of what you expect in an engineering situation. Your requirements, if they're very stringent, cost more and are harder to achieve in a real system. And so there's been a lot that's been learned about implementing real QKD systems and what goes into the engineering. So I'm going to basically present a new protocol, which I hope makes the engineering a little bit easier in terms of making it more secure for a given amount of effort. And that's the motivation in terms of practicality. What I really care about is this connection between contextuality, classicality, and whatever it is that makes QKD work, period, whether it works well or not. So what's the resource that makes QKD work? Well, the resource is you have access to qubits. Okay, that's not terribly helpful. So really, this is why I really like the ontological framework, because it's a nice, clear way of trying to define what I mean by, or what we mean by, might mean by classicality of a system. Because if it's classical, then your eavesdropper can control it. She can copy the information. She can hack the system. So you want to, in some sense, measure the degree of classicality in your quantum channel and use that as a way of warranting the security. So this is the end goal. So I believe there's a connection. Well, I'll get into the details in a second. So we're going to go with this conjecture that contextuality is the resource. Contextuality is defined in terms of this ontological framework, basically Rob Speckin's work. And then the operational measure of it, or an operational measure of it, will involve basically utilizing the work that Matt Pusey had recently, showing that there can be a connection between anomalous real weak value, anomalous weak values, basically, and a demonstration of contextuality. But of course, then, just because you can demonstrate contextuality, that doesn't mean you can measure it. You need a quantitative measure of some sort in order to use that. And then I'm going to claim that this is robust against a very strong class of hacking strategies that basically target the detectors in the real systems. Okay, so this is the basic question. Can we distinguish between a somewhat noisy qubit channel and a stochastic classical channel? Well, yes. You can, in some sense, because you can send lots of qubits through it and see what happens. But can you do it in the context of QKD? That's really what I'm trying to do here. So, and I want to do it using just prepare and measure protocols. I don't want to do it using entanglement or something like that. So if we're restricted to just the classic VB84 protocol, basically you can't, because, you can demonstrate hacking, which comes down to an assumption that's in the VB84 protocol that's being exploited by these hacks. So you have to add additional assumptions. But you're very highly constrained in what you're doing here in terms of what you're looking, in terms of the measurement statistics you're looking at inside the VB84 protocol, because you're just doing strong measurements in two bases and looking at the statistics. So you've got basically four states available. So that's very restricted. Okay. So We would like to use basically quantum foundations to give some insight into how we can make BB84 better, basically. So this just repeats what I said earlier, which is that we're looking for a way of characterizing what we mean by a classical hidden variable that Eve essentially controls. So if there is a classical hidden variable that can reproduce the results of your channel, then it's not really a quantum channel in the sense that it's not secure. She has all the information. So I also make a parenthetical note here that there have been some established connections between types of contextuality and some models of fault-tolerant universal computation. So it's beginning more and more to look like that's also a resource in some of the other technologically useful things that you can have in quantum information. So I'm not going to use this in particular in any detail, really. But I just wanted for reference to say what I mean by an ontological model, which is this is directly out of Rob's paper, Speckin's paper. So we have the operational and the ontological, and then you connect the two. But you have two measurement procedures are equivalent operationally if they're indistinguishable in terms of the probabilities of the outcomes. And then the ontological model posits you have these variables that are determining these probabilities for the outcomes for measurement M and outcome K. And you just integrate over those to get what we see here in quantum mechanics. So you want this to agree. Now, the thing I'm particularly focusing on here is going to be measurement non-contextuality. This assumption that the model is measurement non-contextual is basically that the this probability function that relates the ontological variable to the outcomes of the measurements is independent of these equivalence classes of ways of doing the measurement. So in the case of Cochin-Specker, if this is an indicator function, which basically a projection of zeros and ones, if we're thinking about measuring a projector, then an example of that would be your usual KS sets. This is more general, of course, because these don't have to be projected measurements, which is going to be important. So first of all, let me rewind for a second and talk a little bit about the predominant way of hacking existing systems, which are essentially all based on BB84 or some variant of it. And really comes down to this first thing here. This is the assumption that's hidden in BB84, which is that if you remember Alice and Bob, or Alice prepares one of the four states in a random basis in a random bit, sends it to Bob, he measures in a random basis, and eventually they compare notes on half of the results where they're in the same basis. And then they estimate the bit error rate of the channel, and there are ways to use that to warrant the security. However, you're assuming that the half that they chose randomly was really random. So the way you violate that is by having Eve force Bob's choice for every detection he actually gets to be more likely than not to be in the basis that Eve chose if she does, for instance, an intercept resend attack. Now, that'll disturb the state, but if Bob never measures in a basis other than Eve, he'll never see that. Now, if there are no losses in the channel, you can't do this, but in a real system, you have 20, 30, 40 dB of loss. So you almost never see anything. So knowing why a photon didn't arrive isn't an option. So so basically the way Eve does that is to blind the detectors in cases where Bob happens to choose a different basis, and then make the detector fire when he does. This is what Vadim Makarov down the road does. He loves hacking these systems. I was with him recently in Tokyo, and he was begging Toshiba to let him have access to their newest third generation system, and they were going, oh, no, it's not ready yet. And he, after they told him that, he told me, well, they've been saying that for a couple of years now, so every generation they say that. So anyway, that's an aside. So this is a real thing. There are ways around this by using more complicated protocols. Well, they're not complicated in the sense that they're terribly complicated, but they do require things like Bell measurements of arriving photons at a beam splitter. There are lots of losses in those channels, and so getting these Bell measures to occur at a higher rate is very difficult. So the key rates of these are several orders of magnitude below typical BB84 systems. So they're quite slow. To get them even where they are, they have to use quite expensive detectors with very high speeds. Okay, so back to contextuality, or in this case, non-contextuality. So as I alluded earlier, if I'm just making projected measurements on my qubits, I'm kind of blocked by using contextuality because there are non-contextual models for projected measurements on the qubit. And not just on those four, but for the entire block sphere. So Bell did this and other people have done this. So clearly our protocol needs something other than projected measurements. So we're going to use weak measurements, obviously, to do that, and try to demonstrate some utility out of that. Okay.
Sorry.
Sure.
I mean, you're using Speckens contextuality here. So yeah. What you said, that the single qubits isn't true for the Speckens contextuality.
That is absolutely true. Yeah, that was my point. Sorry, I wasn't clear. I was just making the point that if I use KS contextuality, then the qubit is non-contextual. But if I'm making measurements more generally, it.
Well, that doesn't imply that you need more projective measurements.
Well, okay.
Because there's no, I mean, even with just projective measurements, there's no Speckens non-contextual model for a qubit.
Okay, this is a subtlety I need to understand. So I definitely want to talk to you afterwards because there's something, as I alluded to earlier, I'm still trying to understand the relationship between his definition and the other. So my question to you now, because this is an important question, is if I do have a POVM, well, actually we know this, right? If I'm looking at generalized measurements on the qubit, that there are no non-contextual models for all of the statistics for those.
But that's true also for projective measurements.
Okay.
Because in Speckens contextuality, you always have to assume preparation on contextuality. I mean, you can't prove measurement on contextuality, I'm saying. You're always testing the combination of preparation on contextuality and measurement on contextuality.
Right. Right.
And so there's no model for even just projective measurements that satisfies both of these.
But if I assume preparation on contextuality.
But you can prove preparation contextuality with just projective measurements.
Okay. Yeah, we'll continue this after because this is important. The point is, I'm going to use Speckens contextuality as a way to warrant the security. Okay, so what am I going to use is basically these weak measurements. So this is just the weak measurement of a general projection operator on the plane that's given defined by the states in the BB84 protocol. So it's the XZ plane. So this is a weak value. Now, this is your final state that Bob gets out in his measurement, and this is the corrupted state that comes out of the qubit channel. So it's some noisy version of one of the BB84 states. And that's just a relation for the weak value of that projector. Now, in this particular plane, all of these are real valued weak values, and they're all anomalous to some degree as long as it's not one of the two eigenstates. So we're going to pick out a particular set of those states, which are given by this. So here are your four states in the protocol, projections onto them. And here are these four H operators, which are basically eigenstates of those spin operators in the along the diagonal direction, the two diagonal directions. So we're going to look at the weak measurement of that, and these actually you can show pretty easily maximize the weak value for these pre and post selection combinations. For instance, this one maximizes this pair and et cetera. So if I take the weak value of this one with respect to those, it's negative, and this one is greater than one, and it works in each direction. So of course, if I happen to be weakly measuring this one and pre and post selecting that one, then that weak value of that one is not anomalous. So, okay, before I go there, let me just say make another statement about the circles. So this is the Bloch sphere, essentially, to start with. If I assume I have a depolarizing channel, then the Bloch sphere is contracted symmetrically. So these lines represent different weak values. So in the case here, I can think of this as representing the weak value, which is maximal. And then, as I'm going to show in a minute, these weak values linearly decay as the probability goes up in the depolarizing channel. So eventually, this comes so that the weak value of this projector is actually equal to the density matrix for the state that lies on this line, which is just the convex sum of the two pre and post selection states. So this square represents all the states in this plane which have non-negative Wigner, discrete Wigner function in all representations of the Wigner function. So these are basically classical in that sense as well. So the point is that if the channel is so strong that the weak value is equal to the state that's on that surface, then it's treated as classical, and therefore the channel is not secure. It's completely classical. If it's all the way up here, then it's completely quantum. It's maximized the weak value. It's maximized this resource. It's pure. Probability of an error is zero. And somewhere in the middle is where the security bound is. Okay. So this is just a protocol. Just wanted to point out these are the weak values for these. For the case when you have one of these along this diagonal, well, it's perpendicular to your line between your pre and post selected states, you get plus or minus 1/2 plus or minus 1/2. So this is just BB84, where I have noise in the channel, except I put in these weak measurements, and Bob is going to record the outcomes of these weak measurements for this set of four operators. Now, you can actually do this without all four, but by using all of them, you can actually also use the statistics to estimate the coupling parameter and not assume it, which is kind of important because if you don't want to trust anything in the detector, you probably don't want to trust the strength of the weak measurement either. Because how big the shift is in the weak measurement is directly related to the size of the weak value. You have to infer the weak value from the conditional statistics. So if you don't know or can't trust the coupling parameter, then you can't trust the number you get out. So that's an important point. So you have to do all four, and basically by doing both, some of those is the identity, so you can use that plus one other assumption, which is that the coupling strength for all four of these weak measurements is the same. So that's an actual physical thing that you have to put into the system. You have to build it such that if it changes, it changes in the same way. So this is one extra thing that we're putting in here that's not just based on this, the foundational stuff. We're actually saying something about how we engineer the system. Okay. So this is what I propose. Now this is kind of ugly, but all that is the normalized distance in that line between those concentric rings, right? You normalize by how far away from that line, the box, the weak value is. There's a few other things in here, is that these weak values depend on the channel noise, which I'm about to show you, as well as the detector dark count probability, because that's also going to attenuate the weak value. And you have to estimate that as well, or you have to have characterized the detectors. So again, that's another parameter you're probably going to want to continuously monitor in the system as you're running it. Now, when I say measure here, you should think of that in quotes. This is with all the caveats I put on this, this is clearly not some type of measure where I can just give you a system you're going to measure contextuality, and it's also very constrained to this subspace of the block sphere. So this is a very, very specific thing. Okay. So this is just for the weak values for any given pair of pre PPS ensemble, these are the weak values that are anomalous. So half of them are anomalous for every PPS you get. And this is a nice behavior. This is just the sum of the probability of the errors. This was between Alice and the weak measurement, and that's between the weak measurement and Bob. So this is probably negligible, but it's just the total channel error, essentially. And then you have to attenuate by the fraction, which are due to dark counts. Because if it's a dark count, there's nothing there, but you still, the detector still clicked, so you think something's there, but the detector won't move. And if I assume that it was set for zero, the weak value pointer was set at zero, then it won't move, and that gives you this attenuation parameter. Okay, so we put all that together, and then we try to argue, at least for individual channel attacks. And what I mean by that is, the eavesdropper only has access to the channel for each photon individually. So she's not attacking the channel with some collective measurement using a quantum memory where she's interacting with each of the uses of the channel. So I'm basically assuming that each use of the channel is not entangled with the others. It's they're all separable or statistically independent. It's very difficult to do anything other than this. This includes optimal cloning attacks and things like that. So this is a pretty strong kind of attack, even though it's not the most powerful. So basically, I assume that my channel is, since each use is statistically independent, if it's noisy, it's some convex sum between a perfect channel and a classical channel, and the parameter is A. So if it's more quantum than classical, then there's some information that Bob has that Eve doesn't have, and therefore it's possible in principle to distill a secure key. So if you just follow the algebra, it gives you a bound like this on this side. Now, if the detector dark counts are close to zero, this is negligible. So this basically becomes the channel noise is below this number, which is the known bound for the optimal attacks or individual attack. So that was interesting. All right. So this is just going through the protocol again. I just wanted to point out one thing I didn't mention earlier, though, is that we're actually measuring the error in the channel, the probability of an error, the bit error rate, essentially. But we're not using any of the raw key that we usually use in BB84 to do that. We're using the statistics, the conditional statistics of the weak measurements, to estimate the channel errors. And you don't really have to assume depolarizing. You can have something that's not symmetric. You just have more parameters that you have to estimate. You basically break up your statistics into more piles, so you just need more data. You have to condition more carefully on the pre-selection states. Okay. That's the idea. You might worry about errors, but of course, as we all know, the errors kind of go down with the square of the coupling parameter. So these are well less than a tenth of a percent in a real system. And then finally, blinding attacks don't work at all on this, because if Eve were to correlate her Bob's basis choice with hers, then the statistics that the weak measurement actually gets out is A, not correlated with Alice, because they're now in a different basis from Alice, because that was the assumption in the protocol. And so the weak values actually have to be equal to the expectation value of the projector, which are always inside the eigen. They're always between 0 and 1, obviously, and so that contextuality measure gives completely 0 in that case. And so it's actually easier to detect those strategies than just to do a straightforward intercept-resend attack. So, again, this seems to work. It's secure against the hacking strategies. It gives me essentially at least the rate of VB84 because I'm not throwing away some of the raw key to estimate the channel error rate. But I will highlight some limitations. I assumed a single photon was used to encode each bit of information. I didn't make really any assumptions about the detector side, but I did make a strong assumption about the source, which is that I'm really using a single photon, a single qubit for each bit that I'm encoding. You have this problem with all QKD single photon QKD protocols. There are ways around that, and I'm looking into extending using some of those tricks to extend this to, say, for instance, weak coherent states with small average photon number. And then finally, the engineering price you pay for all of this is that you have much larger the block sizes for your raw key that you're sending to do the estimation is bigger. It's bigger by roughly this factor, the square of the coupling over basically the square of the coupling. Its coupling is small, square is even smaller. So this factor is on the order of a few thousand at least. So it doesn't slow the key rate down, but it does increase the amount of time it takes to get the system up and running and get it the estimates. There might be a way to use the fact that you need lots of data to get those estimates really tight. Maybe there's some way to use fluctuations to get some information. I'm not sure, but that could be a weakness. All right. And I also want to think about the foundational stuff more, and I want to basically extend using this weak value picture for measures of contextuality and for real, at least for finite dimensional systems. But you can see right away that then we have to figure out what to do with the imaginary component, because the parts of the state space which have non-negative Wigner function for all representations, those things have complex weak values that are outside that. The complex weak value thing is to get a really tight bound on where that boundary is, we're going to have to deal with the complex part. And if you, for details, see this paper from back in December. And that's it. Thank you.
Questions?
I have homework with you, so I want to understand. Sure.
For the higher dimensional state, do you expect the security to get better, or what's the advantage?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer because I don't really understand the geometry in the higher dimensional state spaces yet. So there's also a relationship between Speckens contextuality, the negativity of the Wigner function, not for one representation, but having it be non-negative for all representations, and also the states. If I'm using pre- and post-selected states that are chosen for MUBs, then if I look at the weak value of projectors on any other state in state space, where that weak value has certain properties, I can see is going to be related to those things. So this geometry of non-negativity of the Wigner function that Galvao did about 12 years ago is also a picture. So there's a geometric picture, there's a weak value picture, there's an ontological model picture. All these things fit together, and I only have an inkling as to how it works, so I'm still working on it. I have a few conjectures, but I'm not going to talk about them yet. So,
any other questions? Okay, let's thank our speaker.